It's Friday the 13th. Does this day bring out your superstitions? Do you bring out your rabbit's foot or your four-leaf clover? We're going to talk about superstitions this hour and welcome yours. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, December 13th. If you have them, where do your good luck rituals come from or lucky charms? Do you take any special precautions to ward off bad luck? Or do you purposefully walk under a ladder or look for black cats on Friday the 13th? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Stuart Vise. He is a professor of psychology at Connecticut College. He is the author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition, which received a 1999 William James Book Award, and an updated edition has been re-released in paperback. Good morning.
Morning.
So can you tell us where the Friday the 13th superstition came from?
It's actually sort of a complicated story. The 13 part of it came from, or it seems to, I mean, there's several theories, but the most, the best theory that I've seen is that the 13 part comes from 13 people at a table, and its origin is this, the Last Supper, the story of the Last Supper, 13 people being unlucky, and that in sort of the 17th century onward, in Europe, that was a popular superstition, and then in the late 19th century, early 20th century, actually fairly recently, it was freed from the table and was became just 13 as an unlucky number. And then it sort of naturally adhered to Friday because Friday had been an unlucky day all along, and that Fridays were hangman's day. And you know, people were hung on that day and was thought to be an unlucky day to start a new venture. So eventually they came together in sort of a double whammy of superstition.
I had no idea. My goodness. I was going to say Friday's my lucky day, but yeah. I get it. We had a Facebook a post from someone who thought that Friday the 13th, that the superstition surrounding Friday the 13th came with those slasher movies, Friday the 13th. That's not the case at all.
No, I think it certainly was earlier than the movies, so it's the other way around.
Yeah. So are we today as superstitious as we used to be?
I think we are. That's an interesting question. I think that, you know, in part because of the movies, and, you know, when I updated this book, I went through the cable schedule and looked at all the TV shows that involve ghosts or other kinds of paranormal phenomenon, and it's sort of shocking when you list them all, how many shows there are along those lines. And so I think there's a tremendous interest in the paranormal now, and it is, I mean, I'm not saying that this is a good thing, but I believe that we are for a number of reasons just as superstitious today as people have been, at least in recent history.
What's the connection between superstition and the paranormal?
Well, both are, I guess the way I would say it is that both are things that are properly within the domain of science. In other words, they're claims or statements about the natural world. But they are statements that are inconsistent with our current understanding of science. So for example, you know, the existence of ghosts is something that, to a certain degree, might be testable or should be something that we can either, you know, provide evidence for or not. And yet, it does not hold up to evidence, and it does not. It's not consistent with our sort of scientific understanding of way matter and life proceeds. So you know, that's just one example. But everyday superstitions are theoretically at least testable, and they either will work or don't. And And yet, despite no real scientific backing for them, people believe in them. So, so that's the similarity.
I get it. I guess so. Where does superstition originate? Where does it spring from?
Well, it springs from uncertainty about things in the world that matter. You know, in any circumstance in which there the stakes are high and we care a lot about something that, that's going to happen, if you combine that with not being able to guarantee that it will happen, that, that it's uncertain, then that's the basic circumstance, that superstition will emerge where we care about something very much and yet we can't be certain that it's going to happen. And so, I mean, earlier today I was on the phone with surgeons, you know, who many of whom have superstitions. Their jobs are ones that where the stakes are very high and a mistake could be drastic. And so they employ various superstitions to make them feel as though they are, you know, in better shape to conduct surgery.
Yeah, like what?
Well, the one fellow that I was talking to had this sort of makes sense, but he had a ritual with respect to scrubbing up before the surgery, and apparently there's an old-fashioned way of doing it with soap and water, but they also have this gel that, you know, does it quicker, and just because he wants to, he does both. He does the old-fashioned longer scrub and then uses the gunk afterwards. So, and he admits that it's a superstition and that he does it, but it makes him feel better about going into surgery.
Yeah. So,
and he reported that others have lucky clothes, and you know, they step into rooms with their right foot first and things like that.
Because in some cases, they think, well, I did this the last time and the surgery was successful, so I'll continue doing it.
Exactly. Yes. Now that's true too. Is that there's a sort of conditioning process that if you do something and it works, then you don't want to change the circumstances. You're likely to cling to that and draw a connection. We are, you know, as human beings, we're remarkable at being able to find connections between events and give them some sort of magical significance.
Yeah, and we might not want to, for example, not to get too graphic here, but we hear about baseball players, pitchers who will wear the same underwear because that's what they, you know, I think that was in Bull Durham, that movie, where they'll do things the same way each time because that's going to help them win the game.
Yeah. Now, I one of the characters that I talk about at some length in the book is the former baseball player Wade Boggs, who played for the Yankees and for the Red Sox, and he believed that eating chicken made him hit better. He went 4 for 4 in high school after eating a chicken dinner, and so he ate chicken before every single game that he played as a major league player, and he even put out a chicken cookbook called Foul Tips.
Well, you know, these people aren't these aren't dumb people, surgeons and pro baseball players, so. Why do they do this? They have to know it really doesn't help, don't they?
Well, I think actually, and this may surprise you, but I think that in fact they might help. Here's the sort of condition on that is that if it's a positive superstition and it's geared towards a skilled activity like baseball. Or surgery, for that matter, then I think there's now pretty good evidence that if you're at all superstitious, it will make you feel better, give you greater confidence, and improve your performance. So it's not a magical effect; it's a psychological one. But nonetheless, that's certainly enough to maintain people doing it, I would think. And so I'm a rationalist. I'm not in the favor of people becoming superstitious if they're not now superstitious. But But I also am a scientist and recognize that if there's evidence to suggest that these superstitions make people perform better, then you know, we have to accept that.
I think that's great. We are talking with Stuart Vise. He is a professor of psychology at Connecticut College. He is the author of the book Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question about superstition, or if you'd like to share one of your superstitions. Maybe you have some sort of good luck ritual or object. What is it, and how did it develop, or how did it evolve? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. So, are you lucky? Do you have a good luck ritual? Do you have some sort of lucky charm? Rabbit's foot, four-leaf clover? Do you throw salt over your shoulder? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with the author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. And we're welcoming your input. Let's take our first caller, Dan in Drummond. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Years ago, when I used to take care of a landfill over in Mellon, they had put in a lagoon system for the sewage. And one of the things they did was they had gotten this Kentucky clover from Kentucky for that. And one of the things that I used to do was to take a little bit of time at the end of my day and look for four-leaf clovers. And I usually found quite a few of them. But one of the other things that I used to do, if I had planned to go someplace, I always would leave either 10 minutes before the time or 10 minutes after, because I figured if I left at exactly the same time, then maybe I'd be in an accident, and if I left 10 minutes earlier or later, I'd miss it.
Well, and so far it's worked, Dan.
Yes, it has.
I hadn't heard of that one. Stuart Vise.
No, that's a new one. Yeah, but the interesting aspect of that is that, you know, you getting in an accident is something we all would like to avoid doing, and there is a thing about the timing of events. You know, you always hear these stories about people who changed their flight at the last minute and the flight they were going to be on crashed or whatever. We have this tendency to be able to think about what might have happened if one little thing had changed, that what philosophers call counterfactuals. And those things often have a certain amount of weight to them that we think about. If I hadn't done this, I might not have had the event, and so forth. It's an interesting psychological thing.
I have to admit, I have been in a traffic jam because of an accident, and I have on occasion thought to myself, "Oh my goodness." Had I left on time, I might have been in that accident, you know, because of the timing of it. And, but he also, Dan, was talking about collecting four-leaf clovers. Where did that come from?
I actually don't know. Mm-hmm. The origin of that. That's one I haven't studied. I mean, obviously, again, something that's rare and seems special is going to be given that kind of significance, and So I think that's part of it. Obviously, if they were common, then they couldn't be by definition lucky. But I don't know.
Yeah. I know that my dad and I used to go looking for four leaf clovers. That was something that he showed me how to do when I was a little girl, and you know, it was just a pastime for us. And when we'd find one, and he was really good at it, he could find them all the time. We would put them in a really big book and flatten them out and dry them out and save them for good luck. And now I don't consider myself necessarily a superstitious person, but I saw no harm in saving four-leaf clovers. So, what is there? Is there a particular type of person or personality type that a superstitious personality?
There is, to a degree. I mean, it's not a huge factor, but I think, first of all, we have to recognize that the most important thing about becoming superstitious is growing up around people who are superstitious. And, you know, many of the people that I encounter on a regular basis who are superstitious tell me stories about being taught these superstitions by their parents. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be, the socialization has to be a big factor. But beyond that, being someone, I mean, it's all sort of negative personality characteristics, you know, being anxious, being somewhat depressed, having what we would call an external locus of control. This is the person who believes that the world sort of batters them, as opposed to their being in charge of the world. And so there are a number of things that that correlate with it. Being fearful of death, you know, is also related to superstition. So there are some personality variables, but I think that more it is this, more than anything, it's this being socialized, being brought up in a culture that is superstitious, or a family that is superstitious.
Let's take another call from Bernadette in Merton. Hello, Bernadette.
Hello, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a superstitious person, I don't think, although I do wear a lucky bracelet once in a while. But I had a question related to numerology. I believe that's what it's called, where a person identifies with a number or numbers because of coincidence or other circumstance. And I'm wondering if there is any psychology behind it and what that might be.
Well, I think there is a little bit of psychology behind it. First of all, I don't think I'm also one who would not be a believer in numerology. You know, numbers are a remarkably arbitrary thing, and we, you know, the system has no, you know, inherent magical significance for any of us. But I think that, you know, anything that seems to be connected with us personally, we naturally give greater significance to. So if there's a system by which you come up with a number for yourself, you know, you're related to your birthday or your name or some other aspect, that number is then suddenly going to stand out for you, and perhaps you'll recognize it more often when you encounter it. And I think that, you know, we are, as I said earlier, we have this amazing ability to take things that are, you know, objectively random and not holding any special message for us, and yet we can sort of see in them. We can, almost like tea leaves, we can see certain messages or special significance in them. And the number 13 is a perfect example of that. So I think that it is our, you know, sort of inherent, almost desperate search for patterns in the world, for regularity, for predictability in the world, combined with this sort of interesting arbitrariness of numbers that makes that such an appealing activity.
Do you have your lucky bracelet on today, Bernadette?
I think I'm going to go dig it out.
I think about the lucky number. Until you just said, maybe sometimes we associate a certain number with luck because it meant something. I graduated in 1977, and I think of 7 as my lucky number, even though I don't really, you know, I don't know what that means. It's not like on the 7th day of the week, you know, I think something special is going to happen, but... Until you said that, I didn't realize I had a lucky number. Luciana on Facebook says, Friday the 13th is my lucky day. October 13th, 2006, I met my husband, whose lucky number also happens to be 13. So for some people, 13 is a lucky number.
Absolutely. No, that's true. I mean, there's sort of, and it is, you know, it's a number. It's just a number. And the thing is that, you know, there will be babies born today, and it'll be a wonderful event for the families involved. People may meet their future spouses. You know, all sorts of things that can happen that are quite positive on this day. And so the number gets sort of a bad rap. You know, it's just a number.
So is there? We have just a minute before news time. Is there are more men or women superstitious? Is it more prevalent among the young or the old?
As far as age, it's a little unclear as to there is a sense that that young adults actually are more superstitious than older people, but it's a little unclear about that. As far as the gender issue and traditional superstitions, without question, women are more superstitious than men. That's just, I mean, you know, women's magazines have astrology columns, but GQ does not. and so, you know, that just seems to be the case. But then, you know, sports, I always like to point out that sports is still, you know, pretty male-dominated, and we've made great strides with women in sports, but you know, the chicken-eating baseball players are still men.
We are talking with Stuart Vise. He is a professor of psychology at Connecticut College, and he is author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. And we'll continue talking about the psychology of superstition after the news. I'm lucky. So, do you consider yourself lucky? Can you walk under ladders? We thought today would be a good day to talk about superstition because it's Friday the 13th. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and our guest is the author of the book Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition, which has just been re-released in paperback. And we are talking about where superstitions spring from. We wonder if you have any superstitions or if you have any lucky rituals. And we welcome your questions, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Stuart Vise, a professor of psychology at Connecticut College and the author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. And our next caller is Steve in Chippewa Falls. Hello, Steve.
Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I feel lucky. I think I've always been very lucky. And second of all, I think it's important to your health to feel lucky. And I think it's bound up in our genetics. I think that superstition and sentimentality are part of who we are. So, and I think that we're all superstitious. Even the professor who cynically says, oh, the other ones are all superstitious and I'm not. I'm sure that if we looked hard enough, we'd find everybody is bound up with superstition and sentimentality. And I think it's important to, it would be a grim affair to live life without some superstition and sentimentality. I wanted to get a lot of words in there quick, so let me hear what, so thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure, Stuart Vise, if I asked you or not, are you superstitious?
I'm not superstitious, really, but I would suggest that I'm not cynical about those who are. In fact, I owe them a great debt of gratitude because I've had so much fun studying superstition all these years. But no, I mean, I actually agree with very much of what Steve said because, first of all, we are naturally optimistic, generally speaking, and you know the normal state of affairs is that we're overconfident, that we, you know, they call it the Lake Wobegon effect, you know, that we believe that we're all above average. And I do think that that's essential to our psychology. And in the sense that I think we all at times engage in wishful thinking, let's put it that way, of hoping for things that are maybe not as likely to happen as we think. I think in that sense, perhaps we are all superstitious. So I don't have a whole lot to object to in what Steve says. On the other side, I would say I don't support people, you know, believing in magical things when there are reasonable and more rational things that could do the same job for you. But at the same time, I understand why, and I'm not in any real sense critical of people who are.
Yeah. Steve was saying it's kind of hardwired in us. I mean, is there superstition in our genes, in our brains?
Well, I mean, people always say it's hardwired in, and I always wonder where those wires are. But what I would say is that we have this tremendous capacity for learning, for being able to recognize connections between things, and often those connections are real, and that's why we have survived the way we have because of our great intelligence. But sometimes we see connections that aren't real, and we behave as if they were anyway. So I think that there is, in the sense that this may be a side effect of our great intelligence, is that we sometimes see things that aren't there as well. And if that's the cost of being, you know, the species, the wonderful species that we are, then I think that's fine. And I think it's also true that that a sort of general optimism and overconfidence has a great motivational effect. I mean, if you were realistic about your chances of winning a prize, getting a grant, or you know, whatever the things are that you want to do in life, you might never approach them. You might never try, and in that case, you would fail before you started.
So. I mean, is there a connection between superstition and religion?
Well, I mean, this is a question that comes up all the time. I suppose there is a belief in something that is not, you know, subject to reason. I would argue that much of religion is actually sort of in a different category, in the sense that it's not meant to be a scientific idea. You know, science is a great thing. It can tell us a lot of things, but it can't tell you, you know, whether there's a God or not, for sure, and it can't tell you who to fall in love with or what, you know, you should do in many aspects of your life. You know, when religion makes claims about the natural world, about things that can be tested and measured, then unless that evidence points to the truth of that claim, then I would say it's a superstition. So for example, faith healing is something that has not stood up to the studies done on it, and so therefore I would call that a superstition myself. You know, others would choose differently, but there is a connection in the sense of, you know, a belief founded not in science, but superstitions are, in my view at least, are about the normal everyday world, and they're inconsistent with science.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some examples of superstition, like Nancy Reagan, who used to consult an astrologer. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think that in a way there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, so her story, which I write about in the book, is that her husband, there was an attempt on President Reagan's life, as everyone knows, and she grew up in an acting family, you know, a Hollywood family, and she was taught all of these superstitions growing up. And so when, even though she was a good Smith College graduate and an intelligent person, you know, this was the kind of thing that she went to, was an astrologer and someone who could tell her when it was safe for her husband to do various things. So, in one sort of basic human sense, it's understandable. You know, one can understand why she would do that. At the same time, you know, there might be other ways for other people to cope with that and feel more secure. But you know, I don't see anything particularly wrong with it, except for the fact that she did follow this astrologer enough that that you know, meetings were changed. I mean, that's the thing, is that the affairs of state were affected by an astrologer in San Francisco, and meetings were canceled, travel was not undertaken on certain days because the astrologer said it was a bad day to do them. And that's why when Don Regan, the chief of staff, wrote his tell-all book, it was such a splash in the media.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call from Lynn in La Crosse. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering about the origins of, on the first day of each month, in the morning, you say, rabbit, rabbit, or if you forget, you say, tibber, tibber, at the end of the day to bring you good luck for that month.
I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of that one either. It's amazing. No, I mean, there are just so many. It's hard to keep them straight. But no, is this something you learned, you know, growing up?
Yes, I just heard of doing that, so I do it, but I don't know why.
Interesting. Well, the rabbit's foot. I don't know if
right.
I mean, that's certainly not lucky for that rabbit, but
right.
That must have something to do with the rabbit's foot is somehow lucky, and saying rabbit, rabbit on the first day of the month must, I'm guessing, is related to that. But
yeah.
In any case, Lynn, sorry, can't help you on that. But why do you do it, Lynn? I mean, do you just think it's
for good luck?
Yeah, and do you think it helps you? It gives you good luck.
I like rituals, and I guess so. I hope it brings me good luck. Although I don't feel like a lucky person, but
And you're we talked about earlier in the hour, Stuart Vise, that some of these rituals, for example, a surgeon who washes his hands a certain way before surgery each time because he thinks it's good luck. In some cases, this might help a person.
Absolutely. No, it might. And even in a case, I mean, that in a skilled activity like performing surgery, it definitely can help if you're superstitious and believe in these things. And even in a case of complete random, you know, like if you're if you're a roulette player or something, this whatever your ritual is, you know, gives you an illusion of control, a sense of control, even though it can't possibly affect the outcome, and of course, you know, in situations that are random and unpredictable, a sense of control is a desirable thing. People would like to feel as though they're more in control than they are, and so it's enough to keep a lot of superstitions going, I think.
We are talking about superstitions, and we're exploring the psychology of superstitions, and we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your own superstitions. Maybe you have some good luck rituals. Maybe this was passed down from your parents. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about superstitions this hour and wondering if you consider yourself a superstitious person. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you have any questions about the psychology of superstition? Our guest is a professor of psychology at Connecticut College, Stuart Vise. He is the author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. This book received a 1999 William James Book Award. It has recently been re-released in paperback. An updated edition has been re-released. and we welcome your thoughts and questions for him. Bruce called in to say that he sees mostly women at gambling casinos blessing slot machines to try to win, that they will rub their wedding rings and their rosaries and other objects on the machine and give the machine specific directions. So that's another example, Stuart Vise.
Absolutely. No, it's true. And, you know, first of all, women are somewhat more likely to be superstitious than men in many contexts. And, you know, that's a perfectly random activity. The other one, some casinos and other places have bingo halls. And bingo, especially because there's a lot of waiting time involved, people have a lot of time to bring little dolls or other kinds of lucky objects in and arrange them on their space. So there is a lot of superstition associated with gambling, of course.
Yeah, and I don't read my daily horoscope anymore. There was a time when I was reading it. And I'm going to sound like I'm making excuses, but I really didn't think it was going to predict my day. But it might make me feel good if it says today's going to be a good day. And so maybe I would start the day off with a positive note. Is there any harm to reading a horoscope?
I don't think so. I mean, I think most people treat it fairly casually. Here's the thing about superstitions that is, I think, potentially negative, and that is a number of them are negative superstitions, are taboos, fearful superstitions, like Friday the 13th, in fact. And I actually, you know, we've been spending much of our time talking about the positive ones, good luck superstitions. I don't see much harm in most of those. But in the case of the fearful ones, we really would be better off if someone had not taught us those things, because each time they come up, like today, there are people who will avoid making certain plans on this day, will feel anxious on this day, and so I don't see any real benefit anymore to being taught these anxious superstitions, and so that's the one thing that I would say. And so if your horoscope said, you know, that it was a bad day, they tend to have a bias towards giving you good luck, you know, guys. Saying good news about what your day is going to be like. But if it were to read that it was a bad day, then suddenly you might, you know,
go outside.
It would have a bad effect on your day. It'd be a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense.
Matt in the Upper Peninsula is with us. Hello, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I actually had two questions related to the same subject. I've traveled pretty extensively throughout the world, but I never really paid much attention to this until I was in larger buildings, upper class hotels, particularly in our country, where the architects and builders did not build a 13th floor. So my first question is that superstition particular only to our country? And the second question, how long have they been building buildings like that?
Good question. As far as particularly to the United States, the answer is no. I mean, the 13 superstition is also popular throughout Europe and probably other places in the world as well, although it's not universal. As far as the buildings, you know, this continues to be an issue that there's a reluctance to label the elevator with a 13, and there was actually a fairly recent Gallup poll that suggested that, note this, 13% of Americans would be uncomfortable about having a room on the 13th floor of a hotel, and something like 7% of them would be so uncomfortable that they would ask to be moved to a different room. So I think there's a fairly straightforward economic reason why builders continue to label the 13th floor 14, and so that they, you know, they don't have to deal with unhappy customers.
Thank you, Matt. Gail in Grafton is with us. Hello, Gail.
Good morning. Before I make my comment, could I just comment on the last one? I don't think architectures delete a 13th floor. I think they just number them and skip that number rather than filling it in.
Yeah.
Oh, and my
of
comment
course.
Basically, yeah. My comment basically was that, you know, a lot of people send on emails simply because at the bottom it says you're going to have bad luck or you're going to have good luck if you don't send this on. And it's fear-based.
Yes, it is. That's you're talking about chain letters, and they used to be letters, of course, paper letters. And when I was writing the book, I think I got about 7 of them, never with a return address on them. But now they are done through email or Facebook, and they are they often involve like the, one of my favorite ones was this. Very, very famous paper letter that called the St. Jude's letter that had a lot of text about what had happened to people who either did or didn't continue the chain by copying the letter and sending it on, and much of the it seemed as though much of the motivation was driven by the fear that if you didn't do it, something bad would happen. And you know, there was I loved one of the things that was threatened was somebody who didn't continue the chain and was plagued with expensive car repairs.
My goodness.
I mean, the people died too, supposedly, but the car repairs seemed very, you know, that would get me to do it, I think.
Well, we just have a minute to go. Where does the time go? What is the takeaway from our discussion from your book? Or what would you like listeners to remember about superstition?
I think I'd like them to remember that, first of all, if they are superstitious, for the most part, there's nothing wrong with that. And especially if they are involved in the positive superstitions. At the same time, I want them to recognize that this is psychology. It's not magic. And that perhaps, you know, a life of reason and science could also be just as rewarding and helpful to them as one with superstition and unreason.
Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Stuart Vise is a professor of psychology at Connecticut College. He is the author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition, which has recently been re-released in paperback. Thanks to Marika Saval for producing this hour. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production and direction. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There is much more to come, including The Week in Review coming up next. 2 guests from different perspectives talking about the top news stories of the week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I hope you have a lucky day.